G'day everybody, welcome to our super fun podcast episode with the girls over at the Rom Complex. We are talking about Miss Congeniality. Just wanted to pop on early and say that we did have a little issue with Shelby's audio towards the end of the podcast, so you will notice that she kind of disappears at the end. The audio wasn't usable, and that's why the ending sounds a little abrupt, but she had some awesome things to say, and you can hear her really well for the whole first section of the podcast, and it was a really great episode, so stick around, we'll have some fun. And you can hear more of Sam and Shelby over at the Rom Complex podcast. Look up Rom Complex on any podcasting app and also the Rom Complex on Instagram.
Welcome to Story Nerds. I'm Jessica Kate, and it is an exciting episode today because we are here with two special guests. Hannah has had to be away this week, but we have lots of people here to replace her. We have Sam and Shelby from the Rom Complex podcast. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Would you guys like to... Oh, thank you for coming. This is so much fun because I've been listening to your podcast for ages, and now it's so much fun to get to talk to you guys. The voices I've
We're
been
all
hearing in my
now.
Car as I drive around. Would you like to tell everybody what the Rom Complex is about?
Yeah, the Rom Complex is a podcast where Sam and I discuss romantic movies and the good and bad lessons that we've learned from them and internalized and taken into our relationships in real life, for better or worse.
Yeah, so basically we just watch a lot of romance movies and we like to talk about them and how they have affected us, but also just how much we love romance movies, regardless of their effect on us.
Yep, and that so vibes with what we're about here at Story Nerds. So that is why it is such a good match. So much fun.
Dream
and I
team.
Love having a look at the good and the bad things. That's awesome. And we're here to talk about a movie that was a big part of my childhood. We're talking today about Miss Congeniality. So first off, guys, was this movie a big part of your childhoods? What did it mean to you?
Yeah, I loved this movie. It came out in 2000, which was the year after I moved to Florida. And I think I remember seeing it for the first time, not in a theater, but like at home. I watched it with my mom. And I always had kind of this special connection to Sandra Bullock because when I was like 5 years old, I was asking my grandma, what movie stars do I look like? Because everyone would always say my older brother looked like Jim Carrey. He didn't. But I would ask, like, oh, who do I look like? And they would be like, oh, I don't know, maybe Sandra Bullock, which I don't, but I do have brown hair. So, and I was a child, so I was like, oh, me and Sandy B, we're together. So I really loved seeing her in this movie and just thought it was really delightful.
That's hilarious that you call her Sandy B, because I also call her Sandy B, because we're best friends. No, yeah. I mean, honestly, this movie, I don't remember seeing it for the first time, because I do feel like it's just a part of me at this point. But Sandra Bullock has been one of my favorite actresses for as long as I've been able to watch humans in movies as opposed to cartoons. You know what I mean? Like, I have loved her. Practical Magic is one of my favorite movies. Hope Floats is one of my favorite movies with her. She's so charming, and she's just so, like, especially in this movie, there, even when she is supposed, like, she's quote unquote grungy or like whatever, she's gross, even in all of that, I'm like, you cannot deny that her laughing with that snort doesn't warm your heart. You cannot deny it, because it does.
Oh, it so does. This is one of those movies that I feel like I absorbed it through my pores, because I've seen it thousands of times. We had it taped off our television on a VHS tape and we'd missed the start. So it always started like in the middle of that sting that happens in the first scene. So that part where she's a child, I've actually rarely seen because I watched it so many times off this tape with like all the ads cut out and stuff.
That's
but
too
I hadn't
bad
seen it
because...
for like 10 or 15 years.
What a delight to turn on a movie and have it start out with kids punching each other in the face.
Yeah, I know. And it makes so much sense. Like, now you understand why Grace is the way that she is. And so let's jump into that. Let's start going through the actual plot here. So if you're not familiar with it, Miss Congeniality is about a tomboy FBI agent played by Sandra Bullock, and her character's name is Gracie Hart, and she has to go undercover at the Miss America, I think it's called...
the Miss United States
Miss
pageant.
United Miss United States.
You, Miss, yeah, United States.
Miss
United States.
Miss America is the real States one. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the fake version.
Okay. Fake version.
She has to go undercover at this pageant as a beauty queen and is very much not her thing, and it is very funny. And now having, this was probably the first thing I really ever watched Sandra Bullock in, but now being more familiar with her other movies too, where she's so often such, she's such a naturally sweet character, and in this she's allowed to have this edge, and it's so much fun. Every time she punches or kicks Benjamin Bratt in the head, I love it.
They are so good
so
together.
They do have a really good chemistry.
And they keep it, it's
it
funny,
fantastic.
And they're hitting each other, but it's still sexy because you know they're friends.
It's like they're hitting each other, but they're also hitting on each other at the same time. Mm.
It's like in The Princess Bride, every time he says, as you wish, it means I love you. Every time she punches him in the face, that's how she says I love you.
Accurate.
And that really is a good lead-in for the intro, because we start off with Sandra Bullock's character as a little girl in the schoolyard, and this kid is getting bullied, and the bully is like tipping out all his homework and stuff, and she goes up and challenges the bully and basically beats him up and sends him away. But then the little boy that she helped like turns on her because his pride is hurt that a girl stood up for him and he's mean to her, and she's like, she's so vulnerable when she's saying, you know, some girls like boys who are smart and funny, and I like boys who are smart and funny. And it was so sad.
It is so sad, the look on that her little face when he like doesn't want anything to do with her after she like saved him. When I was a kid, I always had, my daydreams were always like, ooh, I'm gonna save a boy from from getting hit or
a bully.
Something. Like, it was exactly like that. I mean, I never did anything like that, but I had the same, like, I really related to that. I had the same kind of like desire to go and like rescue someone, but it's just not seen the same way when it's a woman rescuing a boy, or like a girl rescuing a boy, because I don't know, I guess that little boy couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm. And because she doesn't take any crap, she then punches him in the nose and sends him off crying.
I'm like, yes girl, stand up for yourself, I love that.
And it was so perfect because it summed up the whole movie. Like, her two really key things about her character is that she really wants to stand up for people who can't stand up for her, for themselves. That is like what drives her to become an FBI agent. She's all about that. But she also doesn't take any crap, and she doesn't like being hurt like that. And so she puts up these walls of, you know, I really felt like the movie made a point that it wasn't just that she liked tomboy things, that was fine, but she used it as a barrier from letting people get close, and that was really what they tackled in the movie, so it was a good start. So then we jump to the FBI sting. She is now an adult and they're trying to arrest these Russian dudes, and we get our first view of Sandra Bullock eating. Can we just talk about this for a second? I think she needs an Academy Award for like the most disgusting eating on camera I've ever seen.
She really just goes for it too. Yeah. She really just goes for it. Like she, I think actors in general, at least from what I know, that eating, when you have to eat for a scene, it's like either small bites, especially for a film, it's like small bites that you then spit out because you're doing like 85 takes of the exact same scene, right? But I just can't even just imagine what like a cut for this movie would be like, because if they cut like right after she's just chomping into that food, she would probably like, I can't even imagine, like she does deserve an Oscar. You're 100% right on that.
I do like, I think I like being able to see women eating on screen just as like to normalize it, like you don't have to take small bites.
We eat, like, no,
we eat.
I just like to imagine that in her preparation for this role, she sat in front of a mirror at home and tried to eat as grossly as possible and as loudly as possible.
It is loud.
It's fantastic.
I would, if I was her, I'd be like, let's see how we can make this more disgusting. Let's make it worse. Let's make it worse.
So the sting goes horribly wrong. They're trying to arrest these, I think they're Russian mobsters or something.
Right.
And one of them starts to choke, and Sandra Bullock defies orders and tries to them and to stay still, but she puts down her gun and tries to Heimlich him because she doesn't want him to die before he faces justice. But it gives one of the bad guys a chance to pull a knife on her, and there's a gunfight, and an agent gets shot, and she gets in really big trouble. And this kind of sets up a pattern, do you guys think, for her behavior for the rest of the movie?
Yeah, she's definitely, they kind of set her up as someone who's not going to obey the rules if she doesn't agree with the rules, right? Mm-hmm. And she does that repeatedly. And I think she's kind of right. Sometimes the rules are wrong. So, I don't know, go Gracie Hart for seeing that. And it does kind of play against her at parts, because of course at first she gets in trouble with her boss for not obeying orders in that instance. But later, you know, it kind of is what gets the movie to its climax and where it turns into a, you know, happy ending, because she does go against the rules in certain scenarios.
I think also it's interesting too, like you said before, they set up her character as someone who's very like guarded and has all these walls. But even in this scene, you can tell that she's someone who cares about people, like in general. And she just cares about doing the right thing. So this guy choking, yeah, he could have died and then whatever, a Russian mobster is dead, who cares? But she literally, I think her line is something like, no, you don't get to go out like this. Because she wants him to pay for the things that he did, you know? And then, like, even later when she defies the orders, it's not because she's not defying orders because she, you know, thinks she's always right and she's this cocky FBI agent. It's like she knows who she is. She trusts her gut so much that when she has that feeling, or where she gets, and it's not even baseless feeling, like she gets new information that leads her to these conclusions, she's like, no, I have to see this through. I have to be here when this all happens. And then her boss is like, no. And she's like, okay, well, I guess I'm staying anyway. So have fun on your plane, because I'm not leaving.
And now it's time for a quick break for our advertiser for this episode.
Carla Laureano's Under Scottish Stars, which is the highly anticipated conclusion to the McDonald family trilogy, is now available. Recently widowed Serena McDonald Stewart focuses on her children to the exclusion of her career, her art, and her sanity. When her brothers ask her to oversee the family guest house on the Isle of Skye, it's a chance to dust off her long-ignored business skills and make a new start. But her hopes for a smooth transition are dashed when the hotel manager, Malcolm Blake, turns out to be irritating, condescending, and incredibly attractive.
Malcolm Blake gave up everything, his home, his girlfriend, and his career, to return to Skye and raise his late sister's teenage daughter. With few job opportunities available on the island, he signs on as the manager of the McDonald Family Hotel, which he's soon running successfully without interference from the owners. That is, until Serena shows up, challenging his authority and his conviction that there's nothing missing from his new life on Sky.
Before long, Serena and Malcolm have to admit the spark between them is more than a mere irritation. But as single parents, there's more on the line than their own hearts. Will their commitment to family be the thing that draws them together, or the only thing that could keep them apart? And listeners can receive 20% off through the month of July by clicking the link that is included in our show notes.
And now, back to the show.
So after the sting goes bad, we see a little bit of Sandra Bullock at home, and her house is hilarious. She like has to jam the wooden spoon in the microwave to keep it shut.
I think I read somewhere that whole scene was improvised.
Yeah.
Really?
That the direction in the script was just Gracie comes home. Like, that's it. It was just like she comes home, and like the tripping was completely accidental. I think she ends up kicking, right? She trips over something and she like kicks it. You know, everything from the moment she gets through that door, it was just like it happened, and they caught it all on film, so they kept it.
That's awesome. The wooden spoon in the microwave thing cracks me up every time. I can't believe she improvised that.
She's fantastic. Oh, literally, she needs an Oscar for the eating, and she needs an Oscar for the spoon. Done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. And then we see her like jumping in her car in the morning, and she is talking, having a very serious conversation on the phone. She tears through the city. She uses her badge to get to the front line, and she's just picking up the Starbucks coffees for everyone. And the crowd is so annoyed. And she like, they all sigh together, and she gives them this dirty look and then keeps going. Because she's in the doghouse at work. She shows up and we learn about the citizen, and her boss is furious with her, and she feels so terrible about the agent who got shot. But her mate, Benjamin Bratt, is now given the job of running the operation to catch the citizen. And what did you think about, I had fun rewatching this because it's been such a long time since I'd seen it, watching their teamwork in these early sort of scenes where she's not even allowed to be on the case and he's running it. And yet they're still kind of working together on it.
Yeah, she's the one throwing out all these ideas. She just happens to be in the room, you know, by accident, but she's really there, you know, being nosy and wanting to be a part of it. And she's like, oh, well, we should start with this, or like, you should start by doing this thing. And Benjamin Bratt's character, Eric, he's just like nodding along, like, yeah. Like, he's not like calling around being like, you're not a part of this. He's just agreeing with her because she's right.
And then I think he even frames it when he agrees with her. He's just like, he's like, yeah, we're doing that. Yeah, we're doing that. Yeah, good thing I thought of that. I thought of that too. That was a good idea. I thought of that. You know, like he's basically taking credit for it, but not in like a, you know, traditional like ego jerk kind of way. It's just, he's just like, yeah, you're right. Let's do those things that she just said, because we all know that she's very smart.
That's it. And it kind of shows that even though she's up till this point been shown as a bit of a screw up, it's only because she cares so much. She's actually a very smart agent. She probably would have been better running this operation than he would. And so that was like a nice little insight. And then that takes us to one of my favorite scenes in this movie, where he's trying to convince her. So they've worked out that it's the Miss United States pageant. They need an agent to go undercover, and they have this whole party dress. They have a computer program that's dressing different agents in outfits, and at first they're all being pervs dressing their female co-workers mm-hmm. in these swimsuits and stuff, and then they start doing it to all the guys and their boss, which was funny. But they realize that Gracie would be fantastic at it, and he has to try and convince her, but he makes a mistake of doing it while she's training in the gym. How much do we love this fight?
Love this fight. Yeah, because you can tell they're like, they're fighting it out, and it's somehow like steamy, even though there isn't really, like, their chemistry is just so good that without them being anything more than friends, you can tell in this scene that there's something going on there just from the way that they hit each other.
From the way. I do love also the other agents. Like betting on them.
Betting on it.
Because it's just like, yeah, no, there's like the one agent bets on Gracie or whatever. And then you think, because you get to that moment where she's the one lying on the ground. So you think that she's lost. And then she just takes Eric out right along with her. And then that's when, you know, he gets paid. Because it's like, come on, who would ever, ever bet against Sandra Bullock? Nobody. Nobody mm-hmm. would ever bet against her. I wouldn't.
I love it when they sit down to, and they one of them says, oh, like 20 on Matthews, and the other one's like, I don't know, man, she's got a lot of rage.
Yeah, that cracked me up.
That's awesome. And at the start, I mean, the way their sparring starts is she's got one of those like doll things that she's kicking and using it to train with, and he kind of puts his hands on its shoulders and puts his head next to it while he's trying to convince her, and she kicks it in the head and like smacks him in the head while doing it, and it was like the exclamation point on her sentence, and it was so effective. Like the timing on that was just beautiful. Hilarious. So and it kind of shows what good friends they are. Like, they can beat the crap out of each other, mm-hmm. and they're fine with it. It kind of shows that they have a long history and friendship, and that they're really equally matched, because they fight for a long time, and in the end they both take each other out. Mm-hmm. And I really like that part of what it was mm-hmm. saying about their partnership.
Yeah, it's clear that they really so respect each other.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yep, I really love that part. So then they are, I think from there we get one of our first looks at Michael Caine's character in this movie, which is one of the greatest parts. You're like,
this movie would have been
so much less without him. Almost all the great one-liners.
He just has the greatest. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He has great one-liners. Like, I don't even feel like he talks that much in the movie, but every single line that he has is just, like, punctuated when he says it. You're just like, yep, I'll remember that. Mm-hmm, I'll remember that too. Great.
Oh, it's fantastic. So they've organized with the pageant that she's going to go undercover. We've met the snooty pageant lady who runs it all. And Victor now has to try and make Gracie over, which is just a great montage. And mm-hmm. the bikini wax joke never stops being funny.
Nope. I do also love that scene. It's terrific. I love that scene for the fact that, first of all, you have an entire team, like 20 people, for this one person to make her over. And then contrasting it with the other federal agents who are just like lounging around, like not doing anything. I'm like, this girl is working so hard because she has all these people just on her, ripping hair out of her body, putting things into her, you know, like all this stuff. And you guys are just like eating donuts, and she can't even have a donut after it, which is not okay.
Oh. Every time they give her a piece of celery, I'm like, no.
Yeah.
She has lived her whole life being that size. There's no way that a donut... She eats like all of those other men, and she's still the size that she is. She'll be fine. Let her eat her donut.
But then she walks out in that, like, light purple bodycon dress.
To Mustang Sally.
And it's like, boom. Like,
iconic.
Benjamin is what Brett's that scene eyes is. Are almost like Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, like I think his face turns into a cartoon wolf. Like he is like that close to just his eyes bugging out of his head. It's amazing.
And she doesn't want to hear anything, because there's that moment where they try to say something to her and she's just like, I haven't slept, you know, I haven't eaten, and I'm armed, don't mess with me. Like, do not talk to me right now, because, yeah, I know I probably look whatever, but I'm tired, leave me alone.
That was a great line, and it led to one of the best one-liners of the movie, where she walks off and Michael Caine watches her, and he's like, God, I'm good.
Yeah. It is good. It's so good.
One of the best reveals in cinematic history.
I want that dress. I want that dress just to have it. That purple, that tiny purple dress with the heels.
Just to hang on the wall. I don't even want to wear it.
No, I want to wear it and then walk like out of my bathroom, play Mustang Sally as I'm walking out of my bathroom and pretend that I'm Sandra Bullock to nobody. Nobody's going to see this. No one will see me do this, but I just need it for myself.
So then she goes to the breakfast and with all the other pageant ladies. And was that at the point, I remember there was something Benjamin Bratt did which really, like, annoyed her, and him and the guys thought it was hilarious. Was it when she realizes that her name is Gracie Lou Freebush, which is what she had been making fun of that name earlier, and so he makes it her undercover name, and she sees it, and she's like, she can't yell loudly because she's going through the earpiece, but she's, like, muttering threats to him, and he's just, like, cacking himself, going, I knew she'd like that.
It's so good. Because the teasing that they have going on is so good. It keeps you right there, even though, like, there's not a lot of, like, real romance in this movie, but it keeps you, they don't let you forget how great a relationship these characters have.
It is that good chemistry. They have a really just good, and I think it goes, I think it's because they are equals. I think in a different situation where maybe he was too big for his britches and thought he was better than her and, you know, whatever, I think that dynamic maybe wouldn't have played as well. But I feel like the fact that she kind of is like, come on, we're right here. We're the same level, you know, like, it's fine. I think that's what's able to keep that, like, that cute little banter. Love a good banter.
Yep. So we meet our other main characters in the pageant, including Cheryl, who is the contestant from Rhode Island, who comes across as very stereotypically sort of shallow and dumb. And I did not pick this up until this time that I watched it. So the thousands of other times I watch it, I miss this. At the end of the movie, when they're reading out the little profiles of each character and they say Rhode Island, she's a nuclear physicist.
Wait, what? I don't think.
She does seem, she comes across as so ditzy, but it's just, she's just like a dreamer. She's just kind of like, you know, socially floating in the air, but she does have a brain behind that. And I think that's a good joke in the movie.
That's hysterical. You know, what's really funny is I actually have a friend from college who is a lot like that. She, when you meet her, she has this very warm, very bubbly, very personable, like, personality. And a lot of people think that she's stupid because of it. Because, I mean, sometimes she'll say something and you'll be like, that's not right. You know, it'll be like, you know what I mean? Like, just like a dumb offhanded comment, which we all make those mistakes. But she's actually like an engineer. She's really smart, guys. She like is, she works for a tech company doing, I think it's engineering or something. She studied math, I think, in college. I don't even know. Wow. It was way above my pay grade because I studied theater. So Lord knows that I'm an idiot. But, you know, she like is really like very, very smart. And so that's so funny that Cheryl's a nuclear physicist. Like, that makes me laugh so hard.
It was so subtle. I couldn't believe I never noticed it before, but it was just something they really just let sit in the background and not call attention to. It made me laugh.
Cheryl is like my favorite, aside from Sandra Bullock, is one of my favorite characters in this movie because she's just so sweet and just so, regardless of the fact that she's a nuclear physicist, she's so dumb and it's so cute to me. Like the April 25th, that line. What's the perfect date? I mean, she answered the question.
They didn't say that was a real answer. Like, oh, yeah. I read somewhere that an actual pageant contestant in real life answered that question that way, which is just,
oh, no.
Wow.
That's like, I think April 25th is Miss Congeniality Day. Because you know how all these movies have like dates in them that people, like October 8th is Mean Girls and all that stuff. April 25th is for Miss Congeniality. Because that's when you see all those memes come back. That's Cheryl.
Yeah. Hilarious. And then we see more of Cheryl. She comes to Gracie's room and they share hot chocolate and they have some girl talk. And at first, Gracie like really doesn't want to let her in. And she's just not into this kind of girl. But by the time she leaves and she shuts the door behind her, she sort of has this little smile to herself. And you're like, oh, that's probably the first, like, female friendship that Gracie's probably had since, you know, she was young and at school, that kind of thing. So that was a cute little moment. And that then leads to another really funny sequence when Benjamin Bratt sneaks into her room and bribes her with a cookie to come and work all night instead of sleep. At this point, she hasn't slept for like 48 hours. And for another night, they take her away to coach her more in the pageanty stuff. And Michael Caine's teaching her the walk, and she has all the guns strapped to her legs under the dress.
She is taking guns off of her body for so long. It's so great. Just, and it's like, where are all of them coming from? But you know, that's like, they don't overdo it. They don't underdo it. She takes out like 5 or 6 guns. It's amazing.
It's fantastic. It's, that's the, and she's in like a gown too. It's not like she's in her like plain clothes or whatever. She's literally in a gown, and he's talking about the fact that her knees are touching, but her ankles aren't. And he's like trying to get her to walk the right way. And she's like, oh, fine. Okay. And then that's when she starts taking them all out. So it's like, she was strapped so like with so many guns that she was literally walking crooked in her dress.
And it was a gown with a split, so she didn't have a lot of leg available for all that strapping.
It's so true.
If anyone can do it, it's Sandra Bullock.
You're right. I do. One of my favorite lines, though, from that is when, like you said, Benjamin Bratt is bribing her with a cookie, and she just goes, "Better be a big cookie." I feel like I've said that multiple times in my life because of this movie, where I'm just like, better be a big cookie. She's just so mad, but she's like, okay, fine.
And I love Michael Caine's comment. He's like, what, no armored car? And she's like, that would be in my other dress.
It's a very funny movie. I laugh a lot.
So many... just fantastic dialogue.
And the line delivery is fantastic. Like, everyone delivers their lines, like, perfectly. So it's just it's so funny. Because she even does it later with that same dress and the donut. She has 2 donuts hidden in each of her, like, boobs. And then when she's walking away, the dog sniffs out the other hidden donut somewhere else in her dress. And she's like, fine, okay. And she just, like, throws it at them. And it's just, it's so good.
Yeah, that was funny. And then because I knew that was going to happen, I was watching her as Benjamin Bratt's talking to Michael Caine. I'm like, wow, she really just positioned herself perfectly behind them. And you know that she's stuffing her dress with donuts. It's funny to watch her do it when you know what she's doing. So then the next day, she goes into the first round of the competition, and she's wearing that ridiculous Bavarian dress, which I think you see earlier on, like, some girl is dressed up handing out flyers, and I think that they, like, got her to give them the costume so that they had a costume for her, and she plays the glasses, but she thinks someone in the audience has a gun. Well, he does have a gun, but she thinks he's going to attack them, and so she crash tackles him off the stage and gets in very
it's on the news. She gets interviewed. And I like that she spins it to be like an anti-tobacco ad too. She's like, we all have very tough stances and we're cracking down on smoking cigarettes.
She just spun it as like the activist pageant.
Yeah.
But then she gets like this real dressing down from the woman who runs the pageant, and she says how she's been like fighting Gracie's type her whole life. Feminists, intellectuals, ugly women. I'm like, whoa!
Yeah.
I mean, she is the villain, so it is... that is not nice.
She had to be the villain. Because she's... saying that, oh, feminists and intellectuals are all anti-pageant and stuff. And I'm like, I don't think that's the people you have to worry about. I think, like, it's probably more, you know, the patriarchy that's causing a lot more problems for the pageant than like, feminists and intellectuals. So it makes sense that she ends up being the villain, because I think she's placing the blame in the wrong place there.
Yeah, and I do think, too, that she, that's, like, I feel like that's our first clue that she's the villain, right? Like, if you've never seen this movie before, it's like, because she literally says something about killing her, doesn't she? She's like, if you try to take us down or whatever, I'll kill. I think she literally says kill you. yeah, so you're like, like, that's, you're taking something a little too seriously right now, lady. But I do think it's interesting because at the very beginning when Gracie keeps referring to it as a beauty pageant, that's when Miss Morningside is like, it's a scholarship program. It's a scholarship program, right? And then towards the end, when she's, I literally wrote this down as well, when she's putting her into the police car at the end, Miss Morningside says beauty pageant. She's like, you know, this is my pageant, it's my beauty pageant, whatever. And that's when Sandra Bullock flips it on her again, and she's like, it's not a beauty pageant, it's a scholarship program. And then she's like, yeah, yeah, and then she goes, yes, and then she closes the door. I love that she just, like, throws back everything that they were throwing at her at the beginning. She was like, well, you know what? Slam door.
And I think her and Miss Morningside were kind of, at the start of the movie, almost two sides of the same coin, in that because Sandra Bullock valued herself for her competence at her work and her brain, she kind of made herself ugly because she didn't want to be one of those pretty girls that Eric dated. Mm-hmm. And so she also has the same, like, wrong view. They both think that, you know, if a woman is like this, then she looks this way, and if she's like this, then she's like that. And it's Sandra who kind of realizes by the end of the movie, like, they kind of talk about her being anti-pageant, and that's actually not something that's ever resolved in the movie. She never really says what her final opinion on pageants are. What she says is that she now values the women who are in them and realizes that, you know, she has so much more in common with them than she thought, and that, you know, liking tomboy things and being great at your job and being smart is not mutually exclusive to also loving fashion or taking pride in your personal presentation and stuff like that. That's really her lesson. And as Australian, I don't really understand beauty pageants. We don't really have them over here, so it's not a part of culture that I understand. But, you know, I liked what Sandra learned there.
I don't know. I mean, I've never been a part of the pageant world. It is wildly confusing, especially, like, child beauty pageants. Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Scary. And I don't think I know anything about it, because the most I've come in contact with pageantry, I think, is this movie and like other movies that have beauty pageants in them. But I think it is, like, ostensibly a scholarship thing for a lot of people.
What's it a scholarship for? I don't even know that. What do they do?
College.
College.
Yeah.
Because I think women...
Based on how you look in a swimsuit.
Because that's what it has to deal with. I will say this. I've never really been into, like, pageant culture either. Never my thing. But I do know that, like, in this movie, the questions that they ask them are very, like, superficial. They even have that montage where every single contestant's answer is world peace. Because that's all pageant girls care about, I guess. But I do know in more recent, like, pageants, whether it's, like, Miss America or Miss World or whatever, they do ask them, like, more legitimate questions. I can't say that the answers are also very legitimate. I don't know, like, what level of, like, depth that not even just these women, but, like, the pageant industry really takes into consideration, like, their views on things. But I do know that they've asked them things about gun control. I know that they've asked them things about different, like, world events and things that are happening currently, and how they would deal with it as a representative of either America or wherever, whatever country they're from. You guys have to have beauty pageants because there is a Miss Australia. That does exist.
There so. Is, yeah. Well, I know Australia won the Miss Universe competition in 2004 because Jennifer Hawkins, everybody sort of knows who she is. But I don't know how she got picked because there must be a grassroots level of it somewhere, but it's very, I mean, my parents even lived at the Gold Coast, which if it's going to be anywhere, it's going to be there. It's kind of Australia's miniature LA. Mm-hmm. But still no one that we knew there even had anything. We knew
underground
people, models and influencers and stuff, and haven't really heard of any pageants. So, yeah, I think it must be very different over
yeah.
there.
Yeah, they probably just don't put as much onto it as they do here.
I will say I've only met one pageant person. Like, I know one woman who was in a pageant, and now she does comedy. She doesn't do pageants anymore, but
oh yeah,
that's I only know I've only ever met one.
I wonder how much the pageantry prepared her for, like, being on stage and having people judge her.
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't help to look like a pageant winner, you know, like when you're on stage. Yeah. I mean, it does help. It does help to be, you know, just gorgeous.
I think it's probably different because at least now you're not having to walk on a stage in a tiny bathing suit, you know, like right. she gets to wear clothes now. But
yeah.
now people Full are pants. Only focused on what she's saying. So it's yes. like more pressure. Yeah, exactly.
So in the middle of the movie, she is now very tired and very sick of Vic picking on her and trying to make her be something different. And she finally snaps. He's really pressing on her for, they're practicing her answers to these questions, I think. And he really touches on a raw nerve for her. He says that she's an incomplete person. She has a gun instead of relationships. And she kind of deflects and grabs a donut, and he takes it off her. And she pulls her gun and points it at his head until he gives her back the donut.
I was like, I wrote down in my notes, like, you can't pull a gun on Michael Caine. What are you doing? Don't you know who that is? It's very shocking.
Mm-hmm. It's a very, like, extreme reaction to, but then it also kind of underlies the fact that he really did hit on a nerve with her. I mean,
yeah.
you shouldn't pull your gun on someone ever, but in this world, this world of this movie, you know, he basically just you literally said it. He told her she was an incomplete person. Like, I'm sorry, I would not have a positive reaction to someone telling me that.
Right.
And then I try to find comfort in a donut, and you took the donut away? Oh, no, no, no.
I mean, at this point, she's gone about 72 hours without mm-hmm. sleep, I think. So she's very much at the end of yeah. her rope. But I like the moment in that it feels like something that people probably have felt like they wanted to do. Like, they were really sad and they just wanted this one thing and someone took it away. And you know what? If I had a gun here, I would love to point it at your head until you came back to me.
Yes. We have two options here. I get the yeah. donut or you get a gun in your face. If I have to put the gun in your face to get the donut, then I guess that's what's happening.
I really want a donut now. We keep saying donut and that's all I want now.
And this is another great moment between her and Matthews because he's out swimming and she goes and finds him and to get his attention picks up a football and scones him in the head with it and says that she's quitting, and they have a lovely little conversation here. What did you think? What did you guys think about what he said to her?
I love this scene. It's so cute. Because he does that rom-com thing where he tells her all the things that she didn't even notice about herself, or, like, you know what I mean? He, like, tells her who she is. And that's such a, like, trope of romantic movies in general, where he, you know, tells her all of this stuff that how could she have known it about herself, and basically convinces her to stay. And then I love this scene. I love so much because when he pulls her in the pool afterwards, and she's like, oh, Vic's gonna kill you. Like, she immediately turns into this, like, child dynamic between yeah. them, where she's like, ooh, you're so in trouble. Ooh, dad's gonna hurt you because you did this thing. And it you get that like very sincere moment between them, a tender moment, as some of my old acting teachers used to call them. And right after that, you still get that really fun, like comedic dynamic between the two of them. So you're hit with this real tender moment, and then you're immediately like, okay, but they're still the same. Like, they're not acting weird anymore. Like, it's not this relationship defining conversation that they just had. So they're able to jump back to normal.
Yeah, he's really supporting her, because she comes out like, oh, like, I'm only doing this because I was the only one available who could wear a bikini or whatever. And he was like, no, it's because you're a great agent. And just the ability of a friend, like, even not even like a romantic interest, but just a friend to be able to like lift you up in the right way when you need it the most is so vital. And I think it shows that she's not an incomplete person. She does have relationships. She's just not completely used to being, to like looking at them that way. She sees, you know, Matthews at first as like a work partner and doesn't realize like, oh, he's also her friend. Like, they're really good friends too.
Mm-hmm. I love the way he said it too, because it was so in character for both of them. You know, he's telling her all these things. You're smart. You take no crap. You're funny. You're easy to talk to when you're not armed. and she kind of pulls this face like, well, I did just pull a gun on Michael Caine. I'll give you that one.
I guess you're right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so then they go into the next round. Now they're in the swimsuit round of the pageant. And just so many funny things that we were laughing at in this. I mean, my mum was sitting next to me on the couch. She's seen this movie a billion times with me. And so she was, like, doing other things on her phone. And at this point, she started laughing and looking back up at the screen. From the moment Michael Caine walked
the
in
cutlets.
Holding those chicken fillets, fake boob things. And he gives her the hemorrhoid cream.
Yes.
And
all that stuff
around. I like when he pulls out the hairspray and she goes, oh, okay, something I recognize. And then he immediately, like, does it on her, on the bottom of her bikini. Yeah. And she's just like, whoa, what's going on? Like, she's like, oh, finally, something.
The way she falls against the mirror.
So good.
Oh, so great. And that's where she gives her fantastic answer to, like, one thing that she would change about the world. She's a tougher punishment for parole violators.
And she says it with a smile. That's all she had to do.
Yeah. This big smile and then a really long pause and then, like, and world peace.
It's good. Because they have to say world peace.
Gotta.
You
gotta.
And this is the point where Matthews is starting to suspect Cheryl, because she's been involved with an animal rights group who had some violent members, and they need her to go and have some girl talk. And she's like, I can't do girl talk. And the guys are trying to give suggestions of what they think girl talk is. And then she's like, you two are obviously hopeless, so I guess I have to do it, but I don't know how this is going to go. And Matthews is like, just talk to her the way you talk to me when you want to know something and I don't want to tell you. And she's like, you want me to beat it out of her?
But then she goes out there and she does such a great
job. She nails it,
of just being herself.
She
brings a pizza and all of the girls are just crowding around this pizza. And she's like showing them like, oh, it's okay to eat this pizza and drink this beer. And then everyone has a great time because they give in to like, oh, I can eat this pizza. I love the image of all these people just gathering around a pizza. I feel like that is a very strong image in my life. You know,
it's like when you have to feed cats and they like start following you, like you have like the can or whatever, and you see like four cats and they're just like following you into the room before you put it into the bowl, kind of a situation, because they literally follow her from the minute she walks in with the pizza and sits down, and just
and
the reaction of eating it. When Cheryl finally takes that bite, when everyone's trying to convince her not to, everyone's like, don't do it, Cheryl, don't do it. She finally takes that bite, and it's like, you can just see the amount of happiness in her face, and everyone immediately pounces. They're like, well, if she's gonna do it, I'm gonna do it.
Yes, that was funny. She does make one comment that I was kind of like, ooh, I don't know about that one. They're like, you can't eat pizza and beer. And she goes, what's it matter? They're going to throw it all up anyway. And I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because they take that, it's not a joke. Like, they don't take that as a joke in it. It's like, oh, that's really happening. Just casual, real casual eating disorder mentions in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't love that. I used to work at a boarding school, and some of our students had eating disorders, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not loving this, like, casual acceptance of eating disorders, but okay.
Definitely that part not aged well. Take that joke out of it.
Remove it from all copies of Miss Congeniality right now.
But the whole scene did lead to another moment that has sort of, like, you know, a new angle on it in today's day and age. And it was something that I'd actually forgotten was in the movie. Cheryl gets absolutely plastered and they're in the bathroom of the nightclub and they're like sponging her face because she is just a mess. And then drunk, she starts to tell Gracie about this time that I think she was like assaulted by a college professor or something like that. And she's just kind of saying it as this thing that just happened. And Gracie's like, what? Like, you never told anybody, you never did anything. And it's kind of this moment where Gracie realizes that just because these girls look like they have these easy lives and all they care about is their hair and their makeup, that they've overcome some big adversities and they have some things that they maybe haven't overcome as well and that they're struggling with. And I think that's a sort of a big turning moment for her relationship with the women.
Definitely. And I love her response to it too, because Cheryl is like, oh yeah, and you know, I didn't tell anyone because it, you know, it just happens to everyone. And Sandra Bullock is like, no, it doesn't. Like, this is wrong. This is a wrong thing that, like, we can't stand for this, because she can't stand to see this, like, injustice and these people being taken advantage of, because she's the person who wants to stand up for them.
Yeah, I think her caregiving nature really starts to take over in that moment. Well, not only too, because, you know, Cheryl technically would be considered her first female friend, right? We had the moment with the hot chocolate, and she is starting to bond with someone that's not a federal agent. And, you know, they have that bond. And then she actually starts to form a bond with the other women, too, because they go to that really cool paint club thing, which, if those existed, I would be there every single weekend just getting paint on all of my clothes. It looks like so much fun. But yeah, and then she, you know, she's supposed to be getting information out of Cheryl. Like, that's the whole point, is like to find out if she is the citizen, if she's the one sending these threats in. But instead she finds out some really like vulnerable information about her, and her immediate response is wanting to protect her. Mm-hmm. It's like, not even just to protect her, but to teach her also how to protect herself, because she has always grown up being very self-reliant, you know, she can fight people and she also has a gun, but mostly she can fight them with her hands. And so she like immediately is like, okay, get up. I'm going to teach you some maneuvers that you can do if this ever happens to you again. So it's just really, like I said before, this character is supposedly this very like guarded person, but she cares so much about these girls that she really doesn't even know that well. And it's just, it's so heartwarming. It's so cute. I'm like, yay, she's making lady friends. 'Cause I love my lady friends. They're the best.
Yep. It was a really nice moment. And it shows that Sandra Bullock is like a real mama bear, and I really like that. So then she now has reason to suspect. During that girl talk, they tell her some things about Kathy Morningside that she didn't know, and it makes her suspect that she is the bad guy. And we were saying before how we thought from that earlier moment where she says she'll kill Sandra Bullock that she was bad. And yeah, watching it with my 12-year-old sister, Abby loves to try and pick who the bad guy is early in the movie. The other day we watched Knives Out, and she literally named like every single character way before you find out who it was. But as soon as we saw that scene, Abby looked at me and said, it's that one. And I was like, nailed it.
Smart girl.
And so now Sandra Bullock Sandra Bullock has now, she took a little longer than Abby to work it out, but she's now worked out that there's a pretty good chance Kathy Morningside has been copycatting this other bad guy, the Citizen, and is the real threat. And her boss won't listen to her, so she decides to stay back on her own. Matthews does not have her back for the first time, and there's a real rift between them.
Mm-hmm. I hate that moment. I don't like it.
I hate it.
It's just like because it's almost like a breakup. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it feels like. Mm-hmm. You've had this great, like, dream team situation the entire time. And in the moment where it really, really matters, you know, this isn't some like small little thing that she's trying to get his side, you know, it's like a big thing. He's basically telling her that he doesn't trust her.
Yeah.
And he let her that's down. Heartbreaking. Yeah.
And he lets us down.
Benjamin Bratt, you let us down.
You let us down. You look very good in this, but you let us down in that moment.
Mm-hmm. He not only like betrays their friendship in not backing her up and not believing her after he said how much he did believe in her, but he's not defending the girls. And, you know, she's saying that it's a credible threat. And he's kind of like, well, yeah, maybe it is, but you win some, you lose some. And she's like, no, I save the girls.
Yeah, it's my job. After she's seen, you know, who these girls are and become protective of them, of course she's going to stay and protect them. Like, she thinks they're still in danger, so she's going to do her job. Not, you know, it doesn't matter what the FBI says. Her job to her is protecting people. So, of course, that's what she's going to stay mm-hmm. and do. And, of course, there's going to be a problem with anyone who doesn't agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So she stays on her own. She tries to get Vic to help her, but he's been told by the FBI that he must leave. But there's a beautiful little moment between them where he says how proud of her that he is and that she's like the best work he's ever done. Yeah. And if he had a daughter, he imagines she'd be like her. And that was
it was really very sweet.
And so she is now at the pageant, and she realizes that Frank is up to something, and she backs out of walking onto the stage, and someone's like, what are you doing? And she goes, oh, I forgot my breasts, I'll be back. it's just like a little thing they don't call attention to, but it's so good. Funny.
I do really love the moment when she walks backstage for the first time without having Vic, and she is a mess. She is a literal mess. She's late. She doesn't know eyeliner from lipstick. She doesn't know anything. And the girls, you know, I feel like in traditional like pageant style or any kind of like, you know, women versus women situation, it's always you get that cattiness, which you kind of get in the beginning from like some of the characters, like Miss mm-hmm. Hawaii and a little bit of Miss Texas. Mm-hmm. But in this moment, they see her totally flailing and they're like, girls, get in here. We mm-hmm. gotta help her. That's such a like very cute moment because, you know, they really are banding together. And I feel like them doing that almost, if I was Sandra Bullock in that moment, I would feel like, okay, I made the right decision. Like, regardless of how this ends up, I made the right decision to stay because these girls are worth protecting. You know, these are real human people and they deserve to right. be protected.
I would also feel that way and be crying because what a beautiful thing.
While they're trying to do your makeup, you're like crying,
you're like,
the mascara
okay, you
off.
You have to stop crying. We need to put your makeup on. I'm like, but I feel so much.
So it's during this round of the pageant that Eric comes back. New information has come to light and he now also suspects Kathy and Frank. And so he's come back on his own without backup to come and help her, which is awesome, but it also leads to another best scene of the movie and my entire self-defense education to this point in my life. The sing.
Sing.
So good.
I like in that scene where she's like, when originally she tells Eric to attack her and he does it and she goes, looks like Widow Alec is skilled. Yeah, I love that she.
And he's so embarrassed.
She gets the whole audience on her side, and she's just like, "Oh, little baby."
I love that it showed her superpower too. Like, this was the real Gracie on stage. She's passionate about protecting women. And the audience loved it. And the cameraman, like the producer who's telling him which camera to go to, he's like laughing, going like, look at this, she's kicking his ass.
Yeah, they're having so a great time.
Yeah. It's so cute.
It was fantastic. And she gives her mate, Cheryl, the batons, the flaming batons. So there's been this through line throughout the movie. And I really loved how they gave each of the sort of more major characters, including Cheryl, a problem that was solved. At the start, Cheryl didn't believe that she thought she had no chance of getting in the top 10. She'd always wanted to do this dance with flaming batons, but her parents didn't like anything ostentatious. And throughout the movie, her confidence builds, and Sandra Bullock gives her these flaming batons, and she does this awesome dance to it, and she kills it. And I love that movie. Like, when she presses a button and they set on fire, I get chills every time.
Yeah, fire is great. I mean, anytime you're doing a performance on stage, add fire into it, you really got something special going.
Honestly, that's probably the reason that she won. Simply the fact that nothing else mattered except for those flaming batons. So,
and then they have the final interview, and Grace gives a really good answer. So they ask her about pageants being anti-feminist, and Vic is like, oh crap, like, what's gonna happen? And then she gives this beautiful answer about how she's come to love and respect these women, and it's so lovely, and he's so proud of himself, and he's like, my gosh, I did it. And then she makes this whole massive threat against anyone who hurts him, and he's so bummed.
So good.
It's so good, though, because she was like, she's like, if anyone was threatening, because the person like asking her the question is literally the person putting everyone in danger, and she knows that. So she's like, if anyone does anything to these people, I'm gonna get them. Like, there's some phrase I'm trying to think of that she does, but that's what she does. Is she straight? She's very straightforward. Look, lady, if you hurt people, I'm gonna get you, and she does. So
I'm gonna get you.
Good on her.
It was like a part of how she said it too. She didn't just say I will get. She like that she would get them. She's like, and if they ran,
yes, damn. Yes.
It's just, like, so clearly, that's why I think Vic has that reaction to her, because it's not just like, and I would hurt anybody that would come after these girls. She's like, no, I would hunt them down. But again, she says it with a smile, so I don't really care. She smiles the whole time she's saying it. It's all that matters.
Okay, I'm gonna... So then they are announcing the winner of the pageant, and by this point they've just realized that the bomb is in the crown.
Right.
Because I think we didn't say at the start, this whole thing, there's been a threat made against the pageant.
Right.
And yeah, Cheryl wins.
Yeah, we probably didn't mention that.
Plot point we forgot.
It's not really what this movie is about. It's really about Gracie finding herself, but I guess there's also the threat of bombing at the Miss United States pageant, I guess.
Whatever. So they give the crown to Cheryl, and Gracie comes second, and she, like, all of a sudden attacks her, trying to get the crown off her head and to save her, but it looks like she's just gone berserk as a sore loser, and so they're all, like, fighting her, and she's trying to beat her off with the roses, and all the petals are going everywhere, and then Gracie gets dragged away, and then she attacks again, and poor Cheryl, she's been walking down the stage with her, like, petalless roses, trying to hold it together, but she's still crying, and then on the second attack, she just balls, and I just loved how hard the actress committed to that moment.
It's so good, because there's so much mayhem, and then it's like a split second, you just see Cheryl, and she's just crying in the most, like, cartoon way possible. Yeah. Like, she literally looks like that emoji. That's like the, like, the crying.
She's literally going like, wah!
Exactly. I also love that the host, what was the host's name? I can't remember. The guy. The host, William Shatner. I just love because he, as Cheryl is trying to walk, he's also trying to sing the Miss United States song. Yeah. So he's like, she's beauty and she's grace. Like,
she's grace, smash.
Exactly. That's just, there's so much mayhem going on, and it's just, it's hysterical.
And so Gracie finally grabs the crown off Cheryl's head and frisbees it, and it blows up over the Lady Liberty thing. And he's still singing the song there with, like, burning wreckage falling behind him. And
he's committed to hosting that pageant, okay? He's very committed to his job.
And then they arrest Frank and they arrest Kathy Morningside, and everybody's safe, which is good. And so we finally have that mic drop moment. Yeah, with Sandra Bullock putting Kathy Morningside in the car and, like, getting that last word.
I love that moment.
It's so satisfying.
Love that moment. Yeah.
And then we finally have what we've all been waiting for is, you know, Matthews has sort of been hinting at it throughout the movie. And I have to say, one thing that bothers me about him is at the start of the movie, he's always dating these really pretty girls, and he's fairly shallow. And then he's obviously gotten more and more interested in Gracie as it's gone. And I think they try to save it a little bit with him saying he's kind of trying to be really cool about it. And he's like, oh, you know, when we're back at the office and you get all ugly again. So, like, he's aware she's not going to look like this, and he's fine with that. I think that helps save it a little bit from him just being shallow and like, oh, now she's hot, now I'll date her.
They're so cute. I love, yeah. You're right, because, you know, he has that reputation, right, of being with all these lovely, kind of, maybe a little too young. awkward. But, you know, then I think, I don't know, I think we're made to believe that the interest is not just an appearance, but in if you take it at face value, yes, we're giving him the benefit of the doubt here. Yes. Just because he's so cute.
He does start to ask her out while she's in the middle of that snort laugh. So points to him for not being put off by the snort laugh.
The snort laugh is the reason I'm in love with Sandra Bullock. That laugh is perfection. I think what's even cuter about Sandra Bullock's laugh is that it's always at her own joke. Like, she very rarely laughs at anyone else's joke, but she'll make, like, a really dumb, like, offhanded thing, and then she'll be like, ha. And, you know, like, it immediately goes into this, like, crazy laugh, and it's just, it's so cute. I love her.
Oh, that's awesome. And then we have the lovely little moment at the end where she goes to the morning after breakfast and they crown her as Miss Congeniality. And she has all her friends around her now and she lives happily ever after.
I just love it because she really does care about these women at the end of the day. And I just love that her last, like, little bit of her speech, she's like, I really do want world peace. Like, it's just, it's so cute. Because, you know, like, she is a, you know, tried and true guns and badges FBI agent. She's, you know, whatever. But at the end of the day, like, there is a softness to her. And there is, and I think these women saw it. I don't think anybody else kind of saw that softness in her. These women were able to, like, bring it out of her, almost, specifically Cheryl, but you can argue that some of the other girls too. And I think she really does start to open up to, you know, she's like, we're all here. We're all in this together, ladies, and we have to bring about world peace. Done.
Oh, 'cause she really does want world peace.
If anyone can do it, it's Gracie Lou Freebush. That's the moral of the story.
Oh, yes, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me, ladies. It was so much fun chatting about this movie with the two of you. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see everybody next episode. Bye-bye.